It's live at 51, presented by Xfinity. There's nothing like it here at Texans House, presented by Courtyard Marriott. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris, joined now by Shannon Sharp. How's it going, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you here today. And, man, so many accomplishments in your career. And I want to talk about the post-playing career, because how difficult of a transformation was that to become a professional in broadcasting and everything else you do after such a fine and accomplished playing career?
Well, I think the thing for me, doing the pregame shows is a lot about analysis. You're talking about what you see. When I watch games, I don't watch with sound because I know what I'm looking for. And so I don't ever want someone to say, well, he just said that because he heard them say it. I know what I'm looking for. I know how to analyze a game. I'm not really interested in why they scored. I'm interested in how they scored. I'm trying to diagram, and I want to tell the audience, this is why this play was successful. Or I want to say, okay, the defense was in this coverage. This is why they were vulnerable. This is why the offensive team scored a touchdown. Well, on the flip side, I'm looking at, okay, they're playing this coverage. This was the right coverage against this formation because they've shown a tendency that when they get in this down and distance, in this area of the field, this is what they like to do. So it's a lot different now because I'm on a debate show. I'm offering my opinion, but I also can offer analysis. And sometimes I do, like when the Dallas played Pittsburgh and Ezekiel Elliott hit the home run 32 yards with like 10 seconds left on the clock. I was able to diagram, this is what should have happened. And we got an opportunity to go through the end zone copy. They were coming with a cat, which is a corner five, which is a corner blitz, and the linebacker Jarvis Jones was supposed to get up underneath the tight end. He's supposed to cross his face because if he doesn't, what's going to happen is going to leave a crease because they were slanting away. He has to cross his face to make Ezekiel Elliott bounce the football into the corner blitz. Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't do it, and Ezekiel Elliott hit a crease and it was gone. So, and it's also because in football, you study plays, you look at the film, and says, okay, in this defense, this is what they like to do. Well, when we get a topic, I have no idea what Skip's going to say. I don't know. I built my case on what I want to say, right, but I don't know what he's going to say.
Especially him.
Exactly.
We got a Shannon Sharp face here.
Oh, yes. That's
perfect. What year is that? What year is that, Shannon? Take a look at that. What year is that? Yeah, that looks like rookie year.
That looks a little younger.
No, is that out of the media guide rookie year?
No.
Oh, wait, look at the haircut. Haircut will give it away.
No,
show the camera.
This is late. This is probably around 96 and 97. Mm-hmm. Because if you noticed, I have a fractured orbital. And if you look up, see.
Oh.
So this had to happen after 95.
Okay. Very good analysis.
That's
does analyze.
That's pretty good. to that point, Shannon. I say this with respect. The tight end position has changed, and I think you were a huge part of that change, mm-hmm. that you were a receiving tight end. But how much pride did you take in the fact that you could knock somebody off the ball? You talk about Jarvis Jones not getting cross-faced.
Right.
That's a tight end keeping that from happening.
Right.
How much pride did you take in blocking guys? Because they all knew you could catch the football, and you were going to go to the Hall of Fame for receptions and touchdowns. How much pride did you take in blocking people?
It was a part of my job because I knew there had been times that I was going out for a pass and it was a blitz, and TD would pick that blitz up and give John extra time to throw me football. So at the bare minimum, I need to hold up my end of the deal when it was time for him to run the football. Now, I was not always at the point of attack. We ran a lot of two tight end stuff with myself and Dwayne Carswell, and a lot of time he was at the point of attack. Mm. They knew that. And so they would sometimes try to overload that side, and then we would have something called where, hey, we're coming backside to you, Shannon. You got to hold up your end of the deal. They weren't going to require me to block Bruce or Reggie White or Michael Strahan 55 plays per game.
Right.
But there are going to be times that they're going to call on my number, and I just need to win a few of those battles.
Yep.
And I took a lot of pride in that because I wanted to show that I was more than just a receiving tight end. They don't say, well, he's just a great quarterback. They don't say, well, he can throw the ball really great down the field.
Right.
It says he's a great quarterback. And so when they referred to me, I really wanted them to say, well, he's a great tight end.
Shannon, how much of the position is running the proper route versus making the adjustment when things break down, being available for your quarterback?
Well, I think the biggest thing that a tight end need to have is imagination. I mean, look, when they draw stuff up on the board, if you notice those X's and O's, they don't move. I told my position coach one time, he said, well, why did you run a route like that? I said, when you drew it up on the board, that X didn't move. I say, I got in the game, and all of a sudden he was moving all over
the
place.
Running.
So you have to have imagination. You have to understand leverage. You have to understand what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I was very good at that. I was very keen to what they were trying to do to me, to take mm-hmm. me away from John or whoever my quarterback was at the time. And so I think sometimes guys don't have imagination. They're too mechanical. They're too methodical. The way the coach draws it up, and that's the way they want to go out there and run it. But things happen. People move, players move around, and there has to be a clock in your head. I always practice running the route deeper than what I would do in the game, because once you get in the game, it's going to speed you up. You need to speed up. And so I would always, you know, John and I, we sat side by side beach in the meetings, and I was like, okay, what? They're saying 8 to 10. What do you think? He says, I tell you what, in practice, go 12, because I know come game time, it's going to be 8 yards. The thing is, as far as route running, you need to come open when the quarterback is ready to throw the football. Because if you're open before he's ready to throw the football, what have you accomplished?
Right.
And that was the biggest thing that I had to learn. I had to learn that me being open only mattered if John was ready to throw the football. It didn't do me any good if I was open, he wasn't ready to throw the football. And so that's why we had to time it up and work on that. It becomes second nature. And great quarterbacks and receivers and tight ends, it's like Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. I mean, it's synchronized. It's almost like I know what he's thinking. He knows what I'm thinking. He sees the leverage in which the guy is playing me. He knows I'm going to do this.
What a reference, by the way.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, my gosh.
Shane, we got a couple of Broncos fans here, and you guys obviously won championships in 97 and 98.
Yes.
I was living at the time and coaching in the city of Jacksonville in 1996.
Yes.
And that loss, John has said often, is the most grueling and gut-punch losses yes. he ever experienced. But it felt like that was the loss that really propelled you guys the next couple of years. That loss to Jacksonville divisional round, how much did that play a role in the next couple of championship years?
Well, as an athlete, most athletes would tell you they remember the losses a lot more than they win.
Mm. Yep.
They remember the wins. I can remember the two most grueling losses in my pro career. 1991, I dropped a touchdown in the south end zone that would have given us home field throughout, and that Jacksonville loss. I've made a lot of great plays. Like you said, I went to the Hall of Fame. I went to Pro Bowls, been an All-Pro, made game-winning catches. But I remember those plays more than I remember all the great things that I've done.
That's incredible, though. I mean, and you seem to have a positive attitude about a lot of things.
Yes.
But it's amazing how that sticks with you more.
Yeah, because you put so much time in, and you want to be the guy. And when they called on me, I was unavailable.
Mm.
That's how I look at it.
Wow.
They called my number, and all the work and all the practice, and it happened just like Coach Reeves drew it up. He said, if you do this and when you do that, they're going to do this, and you're going to be one-on-one with a guy. And it was like, as I'm going through it, as I'm going to the line and I'm lining up at the position, and then I shift out, and we get the guy that we want to cover me. And so now it's up to me. Beat the guy. Beat him so easily. And I just short-armed the ball. And I remember driving home. I called my brother because they Green Bay played earlier. And I just remember, I said, we had a term called answering the bell.
Right.
When you didn't do something, you didn't answer the bell. I said, bro, I didn't answer the bell today.
Well, you had three championships. Let me ask you this. Simple question. What's it like to win the Super Bowl? Tell me.
Man, that first one is unbelievable. Because in 97, when we beat the Packers, they were the defending champs. The right. NFC had won like 13 or 14 straight Super Bowls.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Yes.
And with the exception of the Buffalo Giants
right.
in 90, none of the games had been close.
Yep.
You know, the Broncos had gotten beat 55-10. They'd lost 39-20. They'd lost 42-10. And
yeah, John's mom didn't want them to go back.
Exactly.
She's like, do we have to go back? And he's like, yes, Mom, we've got to go.
And the Cowboys had beaten Buffalo like 52-19.
Right.
And the Packers had won 35-21. So the games hadn't really been close. Mm-hmm. Going into that week, losing really never crossed my mind. I never thought for a second that we could lose this game. And I remember, I just remember when we were getting ready to, before we were going out for the game, we huddled up and Mike said, let's go show the world what we're about. And, we said the prayer and we went outside and the game was the ebb and flows. I think the thing is, is that when Green Bay, they won the toss, they took the ball, they went right down the field and scored. I think we had to get the ball and go back down the field, because if we didn't, we felt they would go run and hide.
Right.
And we would never be able to catch up. So they score, we get the ball and go right back down the field and score. So now they know they're in a dogfight.
Yep.
We always felt we could run the ball against anybody. But I like, we had Rod Smith, he had Ed McCaffrey, and myself. Now, how do you want to defend us? Well, we knew they were going to lift coverage, because at the time I was at the peak of my career.
Yep.
They were going to double me. So in the process of doubling me, that means they couldn't get the eighth guy down in the box. So
Leroy Butler.
They wanted Leroy down in the box. They couldn't afford to do that because they didn't want me in the seam. They didn't want me on the seven route getting big chunk plays. So now TD's getting 5, 10, 15. You know, he never got stopped for a negative play. We never got stopped for a negative play except when we went down for the kneel down.
Yep.
So we just felt that we could run the football. We felt that if we didn't turn the football over, we had an excellent chance to win the ball game, and things played out. But there's nothing like having that how you're going to react, and when you see I've watched a lot of Super Bowls over the years. You think you know how you're going to react when you win, but you have no idea, because – we were on the sideline because Green Bay, you know, we were up 31-24, and Green Bay's marching down the field. And everything seems like it's in slow motion. When you hear people say the ball is just like spinning so slowly. And just, I remember on fourth down, they called timeout, and Greg Robinson, who was our defensive coordinator, asked Mike, you know, well, what do you want to do? He said, hey, run your defense, do what you've done all day. And on fourth down, he gave the signal. That's called bomb blitz. That means he's blowing everything up. We're playing zero coverage. We're coming to get you, Brett Favre. And they brought it. They brought the house, and John Mobley undercut Mark Tremura. And the ball, I mean, when Brett threw the ball is literally like going like this. and it's like time is standing still. And Mobley dropped it. You know, the ball goes incomplete. And then you can see it's like a pause. And then there's exuberance. Everybody's right. Running on the field, everything, all the emotions, all the time that you've been selfish. In order to be great and to be successful, you must be selfish. There are times that you're going to miss recitals, that you're going to miss practices. You're going to tell your wife or your girlfriend, I can't go out to eat tonight because I got to study tape. You're going to miss things that you would probably normally go to or want to go to. All the selfishness, everything that you've done for this moment lets you know why you did it and it was worth it. And, man, winning that Super Bowl, and for me, it has special meaning because my brother was forced to retire 2 years earlier. He had lost his career through a neck injury. And right. So for me, from that point, when I knew he wasn't going to be able to play again, my whole purpose changed. It was no more about Pro Bowls. It was no more about being an All-Pro. It was no more about 1,000-yard receiving season for a tight end. It was about getting to a Super Bowl and winning. Because now my greatest prize would be to win that Super Bowl and give him the ring, which I did, my first Super Bowl ring.
Saturday afternoon, 48 members are going to sit down and talk about who's going to the Hall of Fame. You talked about running the football. You're in there. John's in there. Terrell Davis. Didn't have as long a career as either one of you two guys. Is he a Hall of Famer in your opinion?
He's the best playoff running back in NFL history. He averaged 142 yards per game, and it's not even close.
Wow.
You think about it, he played 8 playoff games. 7 of them he went for over 100. The 8th game, he had 14 carries for 91 yards. So he was still, you know,
right 6, there.
Yeah, way over there. For me, there's no question about it. Mm-hmm. He's a league MVP. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's a 2,000-yard rusher. He's a 3-time first-team All-Pro. Averaged 142 yards a game. They say playoffs is when you make your name.
Yeah.
You tell me, all the great running backs that's ever played, tell me one that was better come crunch time, which is the money time, which is the playoffs, than Terrell Davis. There's no question in my mind. His career stacks up good with Earl Campbell, played 7 years. Gale Sayers, played 7 years. Is it the Hall of Fame or is it the Hall of Longevity? You
right.
want greatness or you want goodness for an extended period of time.
He had the period of greatness. And you said the best playoff. I think he's the best zone scheme runner we ever saw.
See,
Arian Foster, we saw him here in Houston. Yes. Arian was good now.
Yes.
TD was a different kind. He was a different cat when it came to the zone scheme.
I think what happens is that TD gets undervalued because you saw so many guys in that system rush for 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
You saw Clinton Portis, you know, do 1,500 yards back-to-back years. You see Ruben Jones rush for 1,200. You see Mike Anderson rush for 1,500.
Yeah.
You see Tatum Bell. But how many?
TD was the best of that group, though.
No question.
Not even close.
No question about it. I know this. Ask John Elway. John, do you have Super Bowls without TD? I'm going to tell you no. I don't get into conjecture. I don't get into innuendo or speculation. I do not have two Super Bowl rings with the Broncos without Terrell Davis. Now, he was the best playoff running back in the 97-year history of the NFL football. And that's not to diminish anything else, because sometimes when you try to highlight one guy, people think you're trying to diminish another. No, I'm not trying to diminish anybody, because there have been a lot of great guys. But averaging 142 yards per game in the playoffs, I think that speaks volumes to just how special he was.
One more for you. How do you like doing the show with Skip?
I love it.
Yep.
I love it. It's hard. It's actually doing the show is harder than football, because, like I said, I'm studying tape. I know what the defense is going to do in certain situations. I have no idea where he's going to go with his argument.
Right.
So now I built my argument on where I got to go. Now I got to listen and see how do I punch a hole in his case.
Right.
Audible.
For me, once we do the show, we shoot the show 2.5 hours. I'll go train, and then I'll come back and watch the show in its entirety. And I'll pause it. And I'll listen to what he said. I'll listen to what I said. And then I'm thinking to myself, should I have said something here? Why didn't I know he was going to use that argument?
Wow. You use that.
You're just watching film like you've always watched film.
I do.
You'll be the best on television if you do that, because I bet a lot of guys don't do that.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys that don't want to hear their voice. Yeah. Well, watch this one, Mark. Were you as happy as the city of Houston was when Green Bay beat Dallas?
Let's just say I wasn't disappointed. I wasn't disappointed. But the thing is that Aaron Rodgers was playing over the last 8 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
Probably the best 8 games anybody had ever played at that position ever.
Yeah, we saw him in December.
And you can see he can do things that no other quarterback can do.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, he can throw. Think about this. As greater, he's a 2-time MVP. He's a Super Bowl MVP. And you say, you know what? We want Aaron Rodgers to throw the ball from the pocket. How many quarterbacks you say you want? Tom Brady, you try to move him out of the pocket. A lot of Eli, all these other pure pocket passers, you want to get them off their mark. Aaron Rodgers, you want him to stay in between the tackles. You want him to be 8 yards wide, 9 yards deep. Once he breaks that tackle box, there's not a throw he can't make, because he proved rolling to his left, opens his hip, throws the ball 35 yards down the field on a rope. Another quarterback could have made that throw.
That was ridiculous. Oh, my gosh. That was so good.
That was a special throw from a special player.
And he just kind of flicked it, too.
The ball just jumps out of his hand.
Yep.
Because he can throw out for so many platforms, he can throw the ball 60 yards down the field. As you saw, sub-zero weather, he threw the ball 60 yards to Jordy Nelson against the Bears.
Yep.
And then you see him make the play that he made against Dallas. I mean, he's a phenomenal. He has legs. He can change arm angles, rolling left, rolling right from the pocket. He has no weakness as a quarterback.
Shannon, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate
the time. Thanks for having me on today, guys.
Thank you. Shannon Sharp joining us. We are at Texans House. Our coverage live at 51, presented by Xfinity.